Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
It's Power Hour, LSU.
LSU Clemson, let's freaking go. My first play for this game will probably be the under. So, you know, I have watched so much of this Clemson offense this week, and at the same time have watched a good bit with the LSU versus Clemson defense. And look, I am really freaking excited, like many of you, not necessarily just from an LSU vantage point. I'm just excited to watch this as a football fan. And for me, when I look at two different offensive lines going up against two defensive lines that many consider to be great, I tend to lean towards the under. And right now, with the number being at 57.5, I understand I am no Brad Powers when it comes to sports betting analysis, as you could see a stat comparison from last year via Fox Sports right here. Line currently sitting still at 3.5 in favor of Clemson. I do think this game will be in the 20s, right? I have a tough time believing that there won't be some offensive clunkiness on at least one side of the football. On the Clemson side of things, yeah, this offense really had some issues going up against the more athletic teams that they played defensively, right? When they played Louisville last year, they had some pretty good studs on defense, such as the Saints' Quincy Riley. You look at South Carolina last year, a game that we broke down in deep detail. That was a slugfest, if you will, where the Clemson offensive line, while they do return quite a few snaps, at the same time, this is an offensive line that I feel can get pushed around by more athletic defensive lines. And on top of all of that, you look at the LSU offense, this unit has a pretty high likelihood of starting off the game slow, or if they don't start off slow, at some point, they will stagnate. Now, I understand it's tough to be in a spot where LSU and Clemson are both teams that have really, really, really good quarterbacks and really, really good wide receivers. And both of these teams have a bunch of new members in their secondary, in particular LSU with all the transfers. But if you think these transfers are good in the secondary, which for LSU, I do think they're good, and you feel Clemson's defense, while they do lose RJ Mickens, I am just to the point now where I think this game is in the 20s for both teams. So 57.5, it's not the biggest over-under you'll see, but it is still relatively large. So I do see a world where this number could get gassed up because, you know, the public sees two pretty elite quarterbacks and they will go pepper that. It's something that we have discussed on this channel for a while now that we do think that over under will go up. But for me, I do think at least one of these offenses will operate at a somewhat clunky level and we will be under that total. All right. It's not something that I feel unfreaking believably comfortable about, but if I had to place one wager, whether it's the side of 3.5 for LSU or Clemson or the over under, I'm leaning towards the under for LSU versus Clemson because I do think both offensive lines will have issues. Now, here's the thing with elite quarterbacks and one of the quarterbacks being a very mobile weapon and the other quarterback being one that doesn't take a lot of sacks, they can work around it better than most. So obviously that means you should go bet the over, because a lot of you are going to feel this is going to be a high scoring affair. And I've reached out to a few people that do bet college football heavily. I bet college football a decent amount. We're still looking for that big sportsbook partner to join our network of over 12,000. So feel free to reach out. And I say only 12,000 subscribers. I look at my analytics and more than half of my viewership is non-subscribers and haters that don't want to hit that subscribe button. It's free, by the way. I do feel somewhat decent about the underhitting. Somewhat decent. Okay. Feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. We say hi to Ryan. We say hi to Jordan as we move on to the next topic here. LSU is the team under more pressure as we do step one day closer to the game. I don't think it's close. You know, when LSU is in a spot where they have not reached the playoff and Clemson reached the playoff last year with a young team, we could talk about it being a weaker ACC and so on and so on. The truth is, LSU is under more pressure. We did discuss this briefly, though. The ACC is under more pressure for Clemson to win this game, but Clemson themselves is not in a spot where they need to win this game. I still think Clemson finds a way into the playoff if they lose this game. LSU, it becomes a lot tougher. Now, I will also say that while there are some in the national media that are sky high on LSU, Tom Fornelli being one, J.D. Pickle being the other, it was interesting. I did see a few of you post about this. One of you sent me this clip of Josh Pate going through his over-unders. He has LSU at his 8-14 next year, which is a fade, right? That's under their total of 8.5. But if LSU goes 8-4, how are you going to feel about it? What if they play a good 8-4 where they just get beat by some other teams in the SEC that are very strong? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how you're going to react to that. My thing is this. I still look at LSU last year as a team that overachieved and got lucky in many ways. And that is a good and bad thing, right? We've found ways to win games we probably shouldn't have won, South Carolina and Ole Miss. And you win those games, and now you go into this next season with a lot of us feeling that the talent on this year's team is better than the talent on last year's team. So whatever the case may be, I am leaning towards the under, and I'm still leaning towards Clemson winning this game. All right. It is indeed game week. We chatted to Samuel, the LSU Monster, Cliff, Alexander. Good to see each and every one of you. Okay. A few other things. I do want to talk a little bit SEC. I was on a pretty big show in Mississippi today. Talked Syracuse, Tennessee, Oklahoma. Talked about the big game, obviously, in the Shoe this weekend. Pretty weak stuff for Ohio State to ban Mr. Dave Portnoy. I just think this year in the SEC will be a lot like last year in the SEC. No elite teams, some really good teams at the bottom compared to expectation. And I do feel that there will be some teams that seriously disappoint. And the funny thing about it is, to me, the three coaches that are under the most pressure, Hugh Freeze, Brent Venables, and Brian Kelly, they all have one thing in common. I have grown on two of those teams. I've grown on LSU. It's not just me being an LSU channel. It's, you can go to last year's streams and you can go into what we actually did breaking down this team. I was kind of an LSU fade going into last year. But now, this year, I do feel better about LSU going into this Clemson game. And then, of course, Auburn is a team that I've grown on. The play calling quote did concern me, and Jackson Arnold concerns me. But if they can get semi-decent quarterback play, even though they lose a guy like Eugene Asante at the linebacker position, man, Kedrick Falk is a real deal at the edge position for them. I am a believer in Auburn. The team, though, that has caused me the most confusion, and it's one at the very end of the season that could cost LSU a college football playoff berth, is Oklahoma. I feel this team has 7-5 and 8-4 written all over it. And it is interesting because I do listen to other college football previews and sharps and all of it. It is amazing how many people are on Oklahoma this year. John Mateer for Heisman and so on and so on. I am not one of those people. I just don't think and believe in Brent Venables as a head coach. I also don't love this front five and their tight end. I don't love that. I feel Jaden Ott will disappoint this year. He's still dealing with some injuries, and we'll see what happens this year. And I was on him at the beginning of the offseason, but once I dove a little bit deeper, I'm like, maybe this isn't going to work out. And John Mateer, I'm fine. I do think what's going to happen with Oklahoma this year is John Mateer will play well enough to keep Brent Venables around another year. This is the first full year with Jim Nagy as the general manager of the team. So I think they're going to want to run that back going into next year with John Mateer going into year two. But Oklahoma is a team I don't necessarily see what everyone else is seeing, even though that defense on all three levels has a lot to be excited about. They have really good defensive tackle depth. They have, to me, the most underrated edge player on this team in the country right now. So it's weird because I might not be as high on Oklahoma as other analysts out there, but at the same time, that could be the game that LSU loses at the end of the year that cost him the college football playoff. In fact, that nightmare has happened a few times to me. So there you go. Go Hard or Go Home says there's no such thing as a good 8-4 with this roster. That's unacceptable. Let's go through this together, okay? What I don't know if that's bad to me. Okay. I think I muted myself. I thought I was just taking myself off the screen. I do think, oh yeah, I would need to do that. There we go. That's what I wanted to do. Big Turk on my part. Does anyone remember that term growing up? If you're in your mid 30s when you tripped, yeah, I just busted a Turk. Was that just my high school? I don't know. I guess it's just me. Once again, at Clemson, let's just say you lose to Clemson. Let's just say you lose to Ole Miss, Texas A&M. and Alabama. Could you see a world where that is a good 8-4? Maybe so. But for go hard or go home, you must do better than 8-4. All right. Now, a few other things. I want to ask you, whoever you are watching this right now, could I see a world where LSU makes a college football playoff at 9-3? That's actually where I sit right now with this team. I do think they edge their way into the playoff at 9-3. And one thing I will say is that the SEC did say, I say the SEC, but kind of sort of the SEC and college football playoff committees, they did say that they are going to take more into account strength of schedule, because who wants to see Indiana go into the playoff and lose in the first round with that much of a fight? I think most people would consider a 9-3 LSU team probably better than an 11-1 Indiana team. Heck, if LSU and Indiana played a game last year, Indiana would probably be maybe a half point to 2 point favorite. Maybe. So I rest my case. Let's go to Keith. He says the first offensive play will be 12 personnel. Okay. Let's talk about the LSU tight end room. Now, I do want to bring up a few different things. All right. We did release a new way you could support PHL. It's called membership. So under the stream, you could hit the join button. It's only a few bucks a month. You get a cool little logo next to your name, and you'll get chat preference for all our pregame, halftime, postgame shows, all that stuff. I released a members-only film study on Harold Perkins and how he could be used on defense, right? And then on Patreon, you can listen tomorrow to a podcast episode that we released where I talk about the LSU tight end room and some of my concerns about the LSU tight end room going into next year. And I understand that that is a weird thing to say, concerns about a room that many people feel is as talented as any LSU tight end room in recent memory. We talked so much about Mason Taylor and the LSU tight end room. We even released a short, thanks to our buddy Jay Smacks, cutting up something really nice for us. And what's very interesting about the LSU tight end room is they have two really, really good receiving tight ends, right? Obviously, the better pure wide receiver would be someone like Tre'Davious Green, where he was used mostly as a slot wide receiver going into this last season. And then you get to this year, and he will play more traditional tight end with his hand in the dirt, lots of pre-snap motions, and so on and so on. I do think Bauer Sharp will do more of that, because him after the catch is probably a little bit better in the short area kind of split zone return motion actions. So they're both going to play a lot. Could they both play on the field at the same time? Yes, even Brian Kelly was asked about 12 personnel earlier this week. And yeah, you very well could see both of them on the field at the same time. Now, here is my concern, is that neither one of them are traditional tight ends in the traditional sense. Now, the truth is most collegiate tight ends aren't that in high school, right? They're so athletic that you just line them up at wide receiver. The problem with that is, well, you don't have a whole lot of repetitions at actually being an actual tight end. You know, one thing that I go back to is Mason Taylor. You can go back and watch his senior tape. And there is a play that he, I believe, gets flattened by Deshaun Womack, who's now a top 100 defensive end, who is now at Ole Miss, right? He was with us, obviously, these last couple of seasons and didn't do anything. And basically, that's actually a good thing for Mason Taylor. You know, that was a message that, hey, blocking is hard. And, you know, as a true freshman, he was able to step in and play that tight end role. And we never really had a true tight end too. So for me, as far as like 12 personnel is concerned, Brian Kelly said he wants the best players on the field. He said that might be 10 personnel, which is a 5 wide receiver set. That very well could be the that could be the case. You could see that. That would actually be a 4 wide receiver set. A 0 personnel would be a 5 wide receiver set, but you're never ever going to be in that. Now, this is where I go back to my deep sleeper. And I'll just touch on it briefly. It'll be in a podcast episode released to all our patrons tomorrow at patreon.com/LSU football. But I don't know why. This is no camp reports. Honestly, the camp reports have been mixed on the transfer from Texas A&M, Donovan Green. And I did a lot of research on him yesterday. And, you know, I, as many of you know, I value true freshman production. Even if it's not great, it is something at a young age for a coaching staff to trust you to play Division I Power 4 football for an elongated period of time, because this game is really freaking hard to play. Okay. Travis Green, you know, played quite a bit last year. Bauer Sharp, you know, was kind of slowly brought in at Southeastern, but he played a good bit early. But Donovan Green played traditional hand in the dirt tight end as a true freshman, was productive as a receiver with 22 catches, over 300 yards as a receiver, had some brutal games, but that's going to happen if you're a true freshman tight end. And then last year, he tears his ACL before the season begins. Then he returns for 2024, does nothing, relegated on the team, mostly a special teams performer. So what happened? Well, I don't know. I really don't know what happened. I couldn't really get a good answer from anyone at A&M other than, you know, he was in the doghouse for whatever reason. And he wasn't fully up to speed. You know, athleticism matters so much at the tight end position. But ask anyone that works in sports medicine, especially for a bigger athlete where explosiveness really matters, normally it's the second year after you tearing your ACL when you are back to where you need to be athletically. So maybe Donovan Green right now is just now getting into health, getting into form, getting comfortable in his own skin again. So that is my deepest cut player who really has not had a whole lot of camp news, has had some tough days mixed in there, still getting into playing shape. But I do think he is a tight end. I really do think so. All right. We said hi to Tony the Tiger. Cole, you're all right. Good to see you. Carter, this is the first time I went against LSU. I just cannot trust that offensive line. I want this game so bad. Well, join the Army. I don't like picking against LSU. I really, really, really don't. And I'm hoping I'm wrong, which would be the 5th consecutive season opener I've been wrong about. Which is fine. Which is perfectly fine. I want it to happen this time. All right. Kendrick, thank you for the super chat. I really do appreciate you. There he is. I thought that was you who commented, because I think you've commented under this name before. Foundational Black American. There you go. FBA. Also stands for Future Business Leaders of America. Or no, that was FBLA. I think I was a part of that when I was younger. Welcome back, Kendra. Good to see you for the season. Chat's always better with you. Lisi Dex went viral today on Twitter because I just tweeted out my clip, my season opening intro for 2025. All right. Now, I don't know if I want to get into hot take mode. I don't know. I really, really, really don't know if I want to get into hot take mode. But I, you guys come here for your boundaries to be pushed. You guys come here also for community to see other PHLers. I do want to share a few takes. Okay. The first is we have got to have a discussion about season openers. you know, I don't want my opinion about season openers to change just based on the result of this game. I will tell you, though, that it's really hard to be really good at football in week one. I want you to think about how difficult the game of football actually is, how unpredictable it could be. And I'm not talking about like unpredictable in terms of the results itself. It's unpredictable in the sense that you don't even know who your good players are. Okay. In basketball, I have a good idea. I have a really good idea who my best players are just watching practice. And it's a lot easier to scrimmage other teams. There's plenty of different formats of how you could play pickup basketball even, and you can get a good idea who your best players are, okay? You don't have to know a whole heck of a lot about basketball to go to a Kim Mulkey practice and say, okay, Flauje is her, all right? It doesn't take much. You could, anyone that doesn't know anything about basketball could figure it out. Now, it is a more complex game than that, but at the very least, if you didn't know anything about basketball, you'd be like, okay, number four needs to play a lot and probably needs to start. Football, you could kind of do that, but it's harder. And you have to determine this with 22 different players. And the reason why I'm so anti play a strong team in week one is there has been no real dress rehearsal. All right. So what's very fascinating is there was a scrimmage this past Saturday that wasn't really a scrimmage. We had a guest, Preston Guy, on Sunday night. And they were basically, it was more so walkthroughs, right? LSU didn't want to really give anything away, any leaks or anything like that. And a lot of, you know, the actual game plan is done behind closed doors. It would be nice, and Brian Kelly was asked about an exhibition game being played before the season. It would be very nice because these games matter so much. And in the sport where even with an expanded playoff, the regular season matters way more than any other sport. The fact that we don't have some type of dress rehearsal before the first big game of the season gives you a crappy product in week one. And guess what? The ticket prices are ridiculous. And that would be something else is I would push against you spending every dollar of your wallet to go on an exotic week one trip. All right. Vegas is a little bit different, but I cannot remember a time where I have heard so many complaints about this Clemson game, right? Because, you know, you're going to South Carolina. You know, there's not going to be a whole heck of a lot to do. And obviously, you're there mostly for a college football game. But it is amazing how many different people are saying, Carter, I'm spending more money than Vegas this year. The tickets are that high. The tickets are that difficult to get. So as far as season openers are concerned, they're difficult. I'm going to go to LSU Clemson for week one next year when it's at home. But you know, I am of the belief that even if LSU wins this game, I hate difficult season openers, and I hate the fact that college football doesn't have some form of a preseason, right? Every other, and really think about this, every other sport has it. Every single one. High school does it, NFL does it, Little Leagues does it, whether it's a purple and white scrimmage, but most high school teams do a scrimmage versus someone else. So there you go. Let's go, Jace Max. Just made the best video of my life. LGZ, how big of a role will special teams play in this game? It's going to be big, LGZ. It's going to be absolutely big. Clemson's field goal kicker is really good. And here's the thing. If you look back at when we played Clemson in the national championship game, their kicker had an absolute bazooka. And this year, as good as Ramos has been, his leg isn't as good as our kickoff specialist, Aaron Burrell's. But Clemson's field goal kicker has an absolute bazooka. Remember, he hit that 50 8-yarder to win the ACC championship game last year. Now, in terms of returners, LSU's got three legitimate elite options as returners. Xavion Thomas is an elite returner and has proven to be an elite returner throughout his college career. Aaron Anderson, arguably the best high school football punt returner in Louisiana history, and on top of that, returned a kick for a touchdown last year. But neither one of them come close to Berrien Brown, who's arguably the best kickoff returner in college football history. So it could be absolutely massive. Let's go to Jamie with the super chat. Any idea if fans will cheer on the team as they leave for the stadium on Saturday? Yeah, Jamie, I don't know. I'm guessing you mean leave for the stadium in South Carolina? I don't know. What I can do, though, is I could reach out to Michael Bonnet, the LSU media director, and see if there is a sequence of events. Maybe there already is an itinerary that's out there where you could cheer for the team leaving the hotel to go to the game. But I could also take this as if LSU is leaving Baton Rouge on Saturday to go to the game. Now, they will probably, as normal protocol, they will probably leave early Friday to get to South Carolina, and then they'll start their game prep. Okay. Let's go to Julie. Nice super chat here. Who are the fastest corners to keep up with Clemson's wide receivers? All right. So, when we come back, I will give you, to me, what I would do defensively to stop Clemson's wide receivers. And on top of that, Julie did something that was truly incredible in the PHL Discord. Are you missing that sweet swing? If pain is holding your golf game back, you must check out the full simulator at the Lafayette location of Laborde Therapy Center. Yes, Chase and his team built this simulator to go along with a full set of programs catered to your needs. Yes, this entire team at Laborde Therapy worked hard to fix that back. Your elbow, shoulders, wrists, knees, toes, it doesn't matter. At their Lafayette location, 337-981-4053. Call today. But what if you don't golf? And what if you don't live in Lafayette? No problem. They fix anything therapy related. Book today, laboratherapy.com, with locations in Cairncrow, Youngsville, Morgan City, and Crowley. Laboratherapy.com. L-A-B-O-R-D-E therapy.com. Let's go. So Julie said that Josh Williams would be an NFL back. And she asked me quite a bit that if Josh Williams could make an NFL team. And I said the chances were slim. Not because I don't think Josh is a good player. It's that the NFL tends to skew younger. And the NFL tends to skew a bit more athletic in terms of long speed. Josh Williams has some explosiveness. It's not like elite. And he is an older 6-year former walk-on running back, but he made the team. Not only did he make the team, he made a pretty good team in the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the 53-man roster, with one of the strongest 1-2-3 depth chart duos or trios in the NFL. So that number 4 spot was a difficult spot to have, right? I could see Tampa Bay saying, hey, we only need 3 running backs. But they bring in Josh. He's going to play a lot of special teams. And Julie called it. She always said that I think Josh Williams can play in the NFL. And as an undrafted free agent, made the Tampa Bay Buccaneers one of the sharpest organizations in the NFL. As sad as that pains me to say as a Saints fan. Okay. So Julie says, who is our fastest corner? Who would be the corner that could keep up with Clemson's wide receivers? And the answer to that, Julie, is it's complicated. And the reason for that is that Clemson has 3 different elite wide receivers, okay? I think elite is a strong word. I think, you know, when you think elite, you think Malik Nabers. That's transcendent. That's a little bit different, all right? That's on a completely different level. Jeremiah Smith and so on and so on. But I would say the three of them as a whole would equate to like two elite wide receivers, if that makes sense. None of the three are so unfreaking believably good that we don't stand a chance. Like, you know, if Jeremiah Smith was out there, unless you just doubled him every single snap, if he were playing against us, he's probably going to catch at least five balls for 70 yards and a couple of tutties, right? Because he's that good. I don't know if Clemson has one of those level of wide receivers, but they are all three of them, in particular Wesco, to me, they're on that next tier, and they complement each other really well, all right? So, yeah, you know, you do worry about that. But Montour Delane last year had a fine game versus Clemson when he played against him. So he'll obviously start and play a majority of the game. Then you have a whole slew of corners that will play the other spots. You know, last year was a brutal, brutal, brutal season for number one, who obviously had his ups and downs. Okay. Ashton Stamps, I know we've criticized him quite a bit on PHL because the end of the season was so tough. But where I would defend Ashton Stamps is there wasn't much rotation at his position, right? Because Zy Alexander was hurt so much. Our other corners have been colossal busts. And we were relying on, you know, a three-star who had a ton of hype coming in as a true freshman. We liked him a lot. And now he's in a spot where he's playing a lot of snaps, like a ridiculous amount of snaps. Ashton Stamps played the most snaps by an LSU corner since Christian Fulton in 2019. So he was put in a really, really, really difficult spot with a brutal run defense and so on and so on. He's going to play, right? He's going to play a lot. You do worry about him. You do worry about, in particular, the slot corner position. Does Harold Perkins stay on the field in clear passing down situations? If he does, is Clemson going to force him to be out wide and guard slot receivers in space? Maybe they do, maybe they don't. I don't know. But, you know, for me, Julie, I would say our fastest corner is Michael Turner. I would say he's in terms of pure speed, but I don't think he's going to play a whole lot. The corner rotation will be featuring four different players: PJ Woodland, Montour Delane, and Montour Delane will start the most, Ashton Stamps, and DJ Pickett. Okay? So we shall see what happens. I do see a world, though, where DJ Pickett steps in and he is just the best option outside of Delane. And it's the Delane Pickett show for the rest of the season. Okay. I do give Woodland and Stamps a whole hell of a lot of credit, though, because if our defensive backs were performing at the level that they should be, and I'm talking about the DBs that were recruited straight out of high school into the LSU program, if more of those guys played at the level that we needed them to play, we wouldn't have had to play PJ Woodland and Ashton Stamps so much last season, and in particular Stamps, right? And I'll keep making this point. One of the hardest things to go through last year was we having to play so many snaps from players who just were struggling a whole heck of a lot. And not only were they struggling, there were younger players struggling. And that's even worse, right? It's tough. It's really, really, really tough. Noah Youngin coming in hot. Calling me a stupid ass fan. Dang, Noah. Well, I don't want to say anything to you because it I don't know if you're an adult. So for me to say something to you, Noah, can you tell mommy to come shut your Wi-Fi off because you're acting out of order? No, it's a school night. You should be in bed by now. Get the algebra homework done before you come into my stream. You know, so I'm not even putting you down. I'm just giving you good life advice, right? A squared plus B squared equals C squared. Best of luck to you, man. And you're always welcome. No insult. I'm trying to, you know, inspire the next generation. Miss Pinkert, my algebra teacher, she'd be proud of me. And she hated my guts because I played just too many pranks in high school. I know what an isosceles triangle is. Tyler! Trivia Tyler's back in. Perk needs to spy quite a bit. Cade can take it 50. Okay? So, once again, I highly recommend you sign up for the Patreon. Tomorrow, we're releasing a 30-minute deep dive. And it's deep. It is deeper than a Chicago pizza from Giordano's. That's how deep this is. Where we break down Harold Perkins' numbers in space, right? I don't know. I don't know. Do I think Perk's going to have a good year this year? Yes. Do I think this matchup for him versus Clemson can be tough? Yeah, I do. I do. But I'm also of the belief that it's college football. Anything could happen. Okay? Let's go through a few more. I've gotten a few Twitter DMs as well. What I know about Giordano's? Giordano's is the best Chicago deep dish deep hang. It's good to see you in Chi-Town still showing some love to PHL. Now, we go to Chance. Chance has been in like almost every live stream throughout the year. So I'm happy for like our year-long PHLers. I'm feeling an LSU special teams touchdown. I like that. I really, really, really do. Okay. Now, for me, as far as LSU is concerned, one group that I'm really paying close attention to this year will be the LSU coaching staff. Because I think a lot of you have been worried about not only play calling, but development. And it's been brought up repeatedly. Because, you know, I'm the film study guy. And, you know, I get asked, hey, do you think so-and-so is doing a good job coaching up this unit? And it's honestly tough to say, right? It's really, really tough to say. So much of it comes down to just the individual player. So much of it. Do you want it bad enough? Are you willing to struggle for the first time in your athletic career, learning what it's like to play against other athletes who are your caliber instead of 5'7", soaking white future insurance salesman? Okay? I said soaking white. Soaking wet, 130-pound insurance salesman. It's a different world. So each player's development oftentimes comes down to their own ambition, intuition, how they can handle coaching. It's tough. It's really, really, really hard. And for me, I think an issue for a lot of you is, well, our guys are not playing at the level that we expect them to play. And we've had quite a few four-star or better players not live up to their high expectations, if you will. You like the term soaking white? Normally, what I say is like 150 pounds soaking wet in a white tee. I was just, you know, jumbling through it. But I guess soaking white, I guess, I don't know. But the truth is, I and this will come off really harsh, but there were positions last year where, yeah, we struggled, but we were not in great position to be where we needed to be to make plays. You know, I do give a lot of grace when it comes to bowl games, in particular defensive performances that aren't too great. But Baylor, that game, our secondary was all over the place. They were running into each other out there. And it would be one thing if it was guys that didn't play a whole lot. But no, there were some guys out there that's played a lot of snaps. Even with Sage Ryan and Major Burns not being in the mix, you know, one thing that really piqued my interest last year was asking myself, really, how bad was Major Burns? And he was bad in coverage. In the box, as a blitzer, whew, he was lights out. He was very, very, very good. It's just when you make coverage mistakes, they're just more disastrous, right? If you knife in on a blitz and, you know, make a one-yard tackle on the running back, it's not as big of a deal as you getting burned for a slot fade for a 30-plus yard touchdown. So, you know, Major Burns was decent in that one area. Everything else, it wasn't great. I'm looking forward to this LSU secondary just being good across the board. You don't need to be spectacular. There are some things that AJ Halsey is really, really, really good at. And there are some other things where you're like, okay, I don't know if I necessarily see the Jamal Adams, Chad Jones level upside. But you're like, I feel pretty good that he's going to be better than the safeties we had last year. All right. So I'm pretty excited for this LSU secondary. And it goes back to Julie's super chat, right? I just think our corners will be fine. I am just very concerned about the slot. Now, here's one thing where LSU will feel comfortable about going into this game. I do think Demarcus Cooley will play a lot. Obviously, he's played a lot in the ACC. At NC State, he played Clemson last season, so he's familiar with this offense. He's both him and Delaney have played a game in Clemson's Death Valley Junior, if you will. The thing I like about Demarcus Cooley and how he fits what LSU does is you can play Clemson with one of your safeties essentially being a slot corner. And that's essentially what Demarcus Cooley was last year for NC State. He's got an extensive background in that. So, you know, now we look back at defensive philosophy. We used to have one free safety and one box safety. That's how it used to be, right? You know, first example that comes to my mind, you would have Ryan Clark, and then you would also have Troy Polamalu. And Polamalu, of course, was the box, and, you know, the free safety was Ryan Clark. Now, with two high structures and teams rotating into cover three more often, you have to have both safeties kind of be more like one another, if you will, right? They're deep defenders first. And the reason why that's important is LSU wants to play Harold Perkins quite a bit. If you're going to do that, that means your safeties really have to be able to cover. Okay? It's important. It's very, very, very important. Let's take a few more before I get into a few national topics. What's up, Mick? Good to have you back, man. Don't forget pregame, halftime, postgame streams. Goes a long way. We're going to do a pregame, halftime, and postgame show. And I'm going to be at a completely different level. I'm just trying to save up my excitement as we get closer to week one here. But, you know, for me, I don't feel bad about us going into Death Valley, though. Even though I am picking Clemson, I do think Clemson wins this game 60 to 65% of the time. So basically, two out of every three chances, Clemson is winning this game in a simulation, right? This still gives you a 1 in 3 chance, right? Clemson's a 4.5-point favorite. So let's go to Pegasus. If you were to rank the units of both teams, 1 through 6, okay. So let's take special teams out of it. Let's go with, to me, the best unit in this game. And I'm going to go with a shocker. Let's go LSU defense. Best unit in this game. Why not? It's by the hype. Even though I feel this is going to be a tough matchup versus Clemson. And then the second best unit, I would probably say the Clemson offense, third best unit, the Clemson defense, and the fourth best unit, LSU's offense, with the big offensive line question marks, okay? That's where I am. But I don't think there is a bad group, right? The LSU defense was mostly not great last year. I won't quite say bad, but they weren't great. So if this game was played last year, there would be three good units and one not good unit. This game this year, there's four really good units. So that's about where I am with that, okay? And also play callers factor into this, right? I think most would consider Blake Baker to be the most accomplished play caller in this game or the best play caller in this game. Some would say Tom Allen. We'll see. Garrett Riley lives off that last name when it comes to offensive prowess. We go to the next topic here from Memphis. Walking in Memphis. Carter, who's a player that is not being talked about a lot that you could see breaking out this season? I actually shared one earlier, Donovan Green. That's a deeper cut one. Memphis guess Kyle Parker can have a pretty good season, even in the stacked wide receiver room. Yeah, this is what's interesting, Memphis, is that normally on every team, there is always going to be guys that the coaching staff likes more than the public, right? And there's going to be guys that the coaching staff likes less than the public, okay? Great example of this. Actually, one of the best examples of this in recent memory where the coaching staff was undoubtedly right was Denver Harris, right? When our secondary struggled versus Florida State, we were just clamoring, hey, let's just play Denver Harris. Put all the character stuff aside. 5-star recruit. All SEC freshman. The coaching staff was not high on Denver Harris. They were right. They were right. And that was because he had more info than any one of us watching or listening to this right now. Kyle Parker is actually on the opposite end of this. The LSU coaching staff likes a guy like Kyle Parker, 3-star recruit who wasn't afraid to compete. The two receivers that were actually the top 100 guys are long gone. Kyle Parker has been better than both of them. Last year, Chris Hilton is hurt. Guess who's playing a lot early versus USC until he got hurt himself was Kyle Parker. He comes back, catches a deep pass versus UCLA. Probably Garrett's best throw of the season. One of his top 5 throws of the season, we'll put it like that. Now Kyle Parker's fighting back from injury going into this year. He's healthy. And as a slot receiver coming out of high school, caught 23 passes in a game. Also, he's on the younger end when he was coming in. So 3-star receivers, one thing I do like to look up when it comes to being a wide receiver is your age. So, you know, good example here, Malik Nabers, who was, what, the 150th ranked recruit, was younger for his age, right? So if you're younger for your class, especially at a position that is always so deep in every recruiting class and at all levels of football, wide receiver, if you're younger and you're producing, and this goes for any position really, your recruiting ranking should actually go up because recruiting services tend to favor older players for the class. So Kyle Parker was a rising three-star recruit on the younger end for his class. So now he's entering really his athletic prime, like one where you feel really comfortable about if he were to hit, it would happen now. So I like it. I like it. Let's go to Blanche, one of our biggest contributors. Most of the media is piling on the LSU defense and giving Clemson the benefit of the doubt. All right, so let's break down this Clemson offense. I know we released an hour-long film study. It's tough for every single person to watch a full hour-long film study and all this extra Patreon stuff. It's all worth it. This is months worth of research all going into this video and podcasts and all the extra stuff along with all these live streams. I will assure you that Clemson is really, really, really good. This is a really good team. As much as I poked holes into what they did in the ACC last year, and they did take advantage of an absolutely horrendously ass ACC last year. That was one of the worst Clemson schedules I've seen in the ACC Clemson dominant era, if you will. The Dabo era. This is a young team returning a lot from last year's team to this year's team. And they have a huge upgrade at defensive coordinator, and they actually did go into the portal and get a piece that will help them fix a big weakness for what was Clemson's biggest weakness. You know, we had our guest on from Clemson, Will Vandervoort, and he said, hey, the opposite end, Parker, was our weakness. So what did they do? They go pay and get the best defensive end they could find in the portal, which was Will Helt. Now, I will say, I've watched some of Will Helt. I don't think he's as good as Jack Pyburn. I'm serious. I'm not just saying that because Jack is on our team and has been on our channel. I don't think Will Helt is as good as Patrick Payton. That could slap me in the face. Many feel the exact opposite of that. But he's at least decent, right? Y'all, this Clemson team's good. I wouldn't be picking them if I didn't think they were good. And here's the thing, there's no upside to me being on this side because this is what I get all the time. You're just overrating them. You're buying into the hype. And if they actually are good on Saturday, no one's going to compliment you because, well, you know, nobody wants to tell you that, hey, all the research you did was right. I will say I have had a good track record, not necessarily picking season opening games, but telling you how I truly feel about the roster. USC, I felt, wasn't really all that good going into that game last year. Turns out USC wasn't all that good. Going into 2023, I couldn't quit talking about how good I thought Florida State was. They were unfreaking believable that year. This year, I'm getting there with this Clemson roster, but I might be wrong. I might be totally wrong on that. I hope I'm totally wrong on that. Oh, they are ass. I really do. I hope they are assier than season 5 of Dexter. That's how ass I hope they are. We say hi to Roy Kent. You see any setbacks for Clemson's defense with regard to transitioning to a new defensive coordinator in his scheme? It's actually the opposite. Yes, there are new things that the scheme will require these new players to get right. And they did lose R.J. Mickens, who was their best safety last year. With that said, new scheme hurts the new team playing the new defense because we don't have any film on them. Now, we do have some Tom Allen film from Penn State, and it is interesting because a lot of the Penn State strengths are Clemson strengths. T.J. Parker's good. He's not as good as Abdul Carter. 33 was a good end for them as well, opposite Abdul Carter. 6 was a good safety for them as well. He's back for Penn State. They had really good players, and obviously Penn State, we know their linebackers are always going to be great. They were really good defensively last year with really good talent. So Allen comes over, has really good talent to work with, and will be playing lesser competition outside of this LSU game and a few other games for Clemson this year. So you'd like to think that Tom is going to do a fine job with this team. Okay. And to follow up here, Roy has been one of our biggest supporters as well. LSU's defensive backs have looked lost under Matt House. Well, the truth is our defensive backs were lost last year as well, and that needs to get cleaned up. Let's go to Connor. He said Clemson is worried about their DBs being able to cover our receivers, and they are right, which is why me feeling the under is a play here is making me think totally opposite. I hope LSU wins this game 48-38, where I just look like the dumbest person of all time. Sometimes in life, you do just got to go opposite. There is some truth to that. And one thing I will say as far as LSU running the ball, there is a benefit to not being able to run the ball in that if Garrett is hot, it really doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. Because if a quarterback gets so hot in a single game, you'll win that game, right? It's a Michael Penix versus Texas thing. We've seen Joe Burrow do it plenty of times while he was here. And to be fair, you know, as much as Joe Sloan took heat for the LSU rushing attack not really being all that great, you know, our running game the year before was Jaden Daniels. You know, on anything else, it was Jaden Daniels. You know, Logan Diggs had a good game versus Auburn. And then after that, and it's not really a fault of Logan Diggs per se, we really didn't run the ball with running backs. And then last year, you know, Josh Williams just made a 53-man roster. Caden Durham is Caden Durham. Running backs are good enough. So maybe it's a structural thing. I actually do think it's more of a structural thing, if anything. Alexander says, wish Logan Diggs got more carries in 23. I don't. I don't because, you know, our offense couldn't have been any better than what it was in 23. So why, here's the thing, why would Logan Diggs, and I don't want to talk about this too long because it doesn't really matter, but why would we change anything on the 23 offense that statistically was the best offense in college football since 2019 LSU? That offense averaged 7 yards per play in every game that they played. Why would you change anything? You know, we could not run the ball to running backs, right? Handing the football off. It would have helped the defense? Yeah, maybe. So basically, you would say, hey, we need to do something that isn't as good as Jaden Daniels running for 70-yard touchdowns in hopes that 3 and 4 yard gains at a time, which are very unreliable, can help our defense rest. Don't buy it. Maybe he thought Diggs wouldn't have transferred. Well, he was hurt, so that's part of it. But understand, I'm not saying Logan Diggs was bad. I'm saying the opposite. It wasn't his fault. Jaden was just so damn good that we didn't need a running game. Yeah, I mean, that's basically it. You know, if, you know, we talked about him earlier, if Denver Harris makes the most simple tackle of all time when we're up by 9 versus Ole Miss, you know, we wouldn't have been talking about the need for a running game. But I do agree there were times I felt LSU should have ran the ball more. But I will also say that last year's LSU's rushing attack was one of the worst structured running attacks I have ever seen. And I think it's hard to just talk about a full rushing attack because there's so many different variables that go into a rushing attack succeeding or not succeeding. But I feel fine in saying that, though. I really do. Like, it was really hard to fully explain how easily our defenses were keying what we were trying to do while we were trying to run the ball. Yeah, obviously the most famous example of this is when we got in a pistol, we ran outside zone. That's just what we did. And, well, if I know that, football becomes easier. You don't need a Connor Stallions on the sideline to figure it out. But yeah, I felt there were times we did abandon it. But then again, if your best offense was played on 3rd and 7 and longer, you're going to need to throw. Or in LSU's case, run, which I like LSU running on 3rd and long and having good 4th down percentages. So there you go. Chan says, how do I see Kyle Williams impacting this year's defense? I'm glad you brought that up. I put out a social media only clip. Check it out. Twitter.com/PowerHourLSU. There was one of my wife calling me to tell me the big news earlier today that Cracker Barrel is going back to their old logo. I'm kidding. I don't know if they are or not. But the big news that Taylor got engaged. Shout out to Taylor, Travis, New Heights. But before that, I released a clip about what I want to see from Kyle Williams' defensive tackles. Y'all, there were times where I felt our DTs were not literally going all out and playing smart last year. I felt like that watching them. And boy, that South Carolina game, that South Carolina team that beat Clemson, that game reminded me so much of when the Giants beat the Patriots, right? Obviously, Clemson not as good as the undefeated Patriots. But in the first Super Bowl, you know, so many people bring up Lenore Sellers and his ridiculous performance versus Clemson. The same way people bring up Eli Manning and how clutch he was versus Clemson. But the story of South Carolina beating Clemson had everything to do with their defensive tackles. They played so freaking good. That was one of the best played games I've ever seen from a group of defensive tackles, with most of them not making any big sack or any big tackle for loss or anything like that. And that, to me, decided the game. It really did. there are so many instances in yesterday's film study where you're going to go, damn, I can't believe Carter keeps saying hustle and scrap and claw and all of it. And a perfect example of this was a DT for South Carolina running down Bryant Wesco on a screen. And that was one of the best hustle plays I can remember. It was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. And it was a high IQ football play as well because, you know, for me as a DT, I, especially on blitzes, wouldn't rush as aggressively unless that was the call because that would, you know, I want my fast guys going back there. That's the disguise of the play. We want our blitzers getting back there to create pressure. So unless I was just left unblocked, I would like to eat up blocks and open up holes for blitzers. And then if they threw it quick, my favorite thing would be to try, and now I was slow as hell, but try my best to run down the receiver or the back or the tight end slipping. There are so many games won and lost by those types of high IQ hustle plays. And hopefully Kyle Williams brings that. You could see that clip right now on Power Hour LSU's Twitter. Or if you want, I could play it right now.
Sure.
Samuel, thank you so much for your super chat. It goes a long way. Okay. Everyone made a big kerfuffle about the non-conference. Here we go. I'll play right here. Alabama getting rid of a non-conference game versus West Virginia. I like it. Because their non-conference schedule is brutal. I agree with Alabama's decision. I could live without them not playing West Virginia. Just keep the Ohio State games. TPVN, it's been a while. Good to see you. Before I play this clip, let's see Holden. Good to see you. Carvis, Alexander, Jonathan, Jason. I saw you tag me on Twitter. I haven't been able to read your full thread. If it's good, I'll give you a retweet. If it's not good, I'm blocking you until the end of eternity. By the way, here's Jason with some PHO merch. How about that? Catch me outside. How about that? All right. So to answer Chance's super chat, let's go to, how do I feel about Garrett Nussmeier getting number 18? It was a right decision. There's two people that I felt deserve number 18, and it was Garrett Nussmeier and Whit Weeks. That's about where I was on that. I just kept going through it. I was like, is there anyone else that I could see getting number 18? And there really wasn't. You know, I could hear out Aaron Anderson, if you will, but I was fine with either one of them getting 18, and Garrett got it. So it is cool. It was really, really, really cool. Okay. So here you go. So for Chance's question, check this out. All right, so one thing that I hope Kyle Williams brings to this LSU defensive tackle room is hustle like this, right? And it is ironic because Kyle wore number 95 at LSU. So, once again, this offense is good. They are going to make some plays, all right? Now, what you have to do against it is just hustle your ass off and hope for the best, okay? This is pretty sound to the left, right? So they're bracketing the inside receiver, and they're expecting a slant. So you could see it's kind of cut off right here. The corner does have inside leverage, but Wesco dances and jukes him out of his shoes and is able to eventually beat him to the inside. Okay, it's nasty. Kate, trust him, and look at all that separation. I mean, that kind of looks like Justin Jefferson level stuff right here. Now, remember 95? He stops his rush and immediately runs after a wide receiver who runs a 4-4. So after 4 misses his tackle, 95 hustles and is one of the last lines of defense. And while he's never going to make this tackle, he allows Ford to get back in and mitigate the damage, right? So if he doesn't hustle back, once again, Clemson's receivers just do not like taking big hits. They do give themselves up. So that play saved you 10, 15 yards. Good stuff. And what's not shown is a few plays later, Clemson fumbled around that. It was like a few plays after that. So that's why making touchdown savers and forcing them to gain every single yard matters. Okay. Let's go to Samuel with the super chat. Thank you so much for your Venmo once again. Carter, if you knew before the game that we ran 150 rushing yards, would you choose LSU in this one? Yes, because number one, that would mean that LSU is a good team, right? If they're able to run for 150 yards, you know, it will come down to how those rushing yards were created. But also, if you're running the ball, that means you're winning. It's either you have a big lead or you're establishing dominance at the line of scrimmage. Let's go to Ronald Birkins. He says, giving Nuss number 18 seems a bit political. Hope it doesn't cause division on the team. Why not have an offensive and defensive captain voted on by the players? You get better team buy-in. Okay. So let's get something clear. They did do offensive and defensive team captains with Weeks and Garrett Nussmeier. Okay. I will say that, yes, I would have also given Whit Weeks number 18. I would have given both of them number 18. I would have. But I think also in having only Garrett wear number 18 is significant in that there hasn't been a quarterback to wear number 18. And Matt Mock, the first number 18, was a solo number 18. So I get that as well, right? Something else I do like is most LSU linebackers that have worn number 40 and then stayed in number 40 were beast, okay? Duke Riley, beast. Devin White didn't move to a single digit. In fact, moved from 24 to 40. Harold Perkins, his best season, worn number 40. Then Whit Weeks has worn it since then. So maybe you can start a tradition of number 40 at LSU. So I'm fine with it. I honestly am fine with that. I think Whit's also fine with it. But I would have given both of them number 18, especially considering Whit Weeks went through the injury and so on and so on. Garrett is older. And, you know, there's no certainty that Witt is going to go to the NFL after this next season. So there you go. Shimona, welcome back. Good to see you. But I don't really see how it's political, per se, right? I think if you were doing something political, it would be someone that didn't deserve it or wasn't great or didn't exhibit what was needed off the field to be a great team or to be a great player. Brandon Harris, I thought you'd be busy getting ready for Ohio State. The only way LSU wins is if Brandon Harris hits Malachi Dupree for a deep touchdown. Brian says not every number needs to be a tradition. I agree. Cicero. That's a great last name. So there you go. Now, that'll do it for me. Shout out to our partners at Labor Therapy Center. Here's the good news. I'm not going anywhere. In fact, I'm going live right now on Blake Ruffino's show, the mighty Blake Ruffino, AYS Sports. So get on over to that live stream. Someone could post a link in the chat for me right now. And yeah, It's going to be crazy. Last time we shared the airways, we were yelling at each other. I don't think that's going to happen tonight. So there you go. S! Power Hour LSU. Boom! Tonight, we are doing grilled chicken. Shout out to Jamie. Shout out to LA Mom. Shout out to Samuel. Shout out to Kedrick for all your support tonight. And tonight, we are doing lemon pepper chicken wings. And a little special surprise at the end here. We will have two guests on at one time tomorrow night at 6:30. Then on Thursday, a national college football commentator will join us for a first-time appearance. Tonight, we're doing grilled chicken. Let's go. Let's go.